It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And hello, a very good morning to you. Very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio for this Wednesday. It's the 24th of January, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I do hope you're very well indeed. Stay with us over the course of the next 3 hours. We've got loads coming up on the show talking about the big topics of the day. And also we'll keep you updated on what's the crack with power supply, water supply, roads, that type of stuff, post-storm Jocelyn. I think at the moment water and power are the key issues. I think the roads are, thanks to the council crews, are pretty much there or very close to being there. And as I mentioned to Lee beforehand, it's National Compliments Day. So we want to give you the encouragement to pass on your compliments to someone close to you or as anyone. Really, that you want to. We're going to put together a Highland Radio goodie bag for you, a lovely 9 till noon show mug. These are limited edition. We've got a lovely hat for you, a lovely shirt. So if you want to be in the chance to win our goodie bag, send us a voice message paying compliment to someone. 086 60 25,000 on WhatsApp. Pass on a compliment. And you know what? If you want to do it by text as well, that's fine. But preferably, it'd be nice to hear you say it yourself in a voice note. And we'll pick out a winner randomly and you'll win that nice little goodie bag. Right, 086 60 25,000. That's the number for all of your contacts. We accept voice messages, of course, on WhatsApp on any issue you want to talk about or on text, 086 60 25,000. That's your SMS. If you want to give us a call, Caroline and Shannon, taking your calls on 07491 25,000. And of course, we're across social media for those of you who choose to, and if it suits you, to watch the programme on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. And you can watch us on your smart TV with the YouTube app or your Fire Stick or your Google TV if you have that as well. Even your smart displays, we can also pop up on that as well if you go into YouTube and select us. And we're across your mobile devices on that app as well as X and Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. And first and foremost, across the airwaves, across the Northwest and on your smart speakers as well. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, fortunately, there were no serious injuries to anyone when the roof of the Finn Valley Leisure Centre at Millbrae Stranorlar was damaged during Storm Isha on Sunday night. Heavy aluminium sheeting from the roof was scattered across the road and around the building. It's amazing that there was nobody hurt or killed with this coming off the roof, said manager Sean Foley.
Indeed.
On to the Irish Times now this morning. And the government may not identify locations for proposed new reception and accommodation centres for asylum seekers before the local and European elections, according to government sources familiar with preliminary discussions on the subject. So under these plans being drawn up by Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, which a government spokesperson said yesterday would be completed within the next 2 weeks, it's proposed that about six large reception and accommodation centres for asylum seekers will be established by the state as a response to the current refugee accommodation crisis. So I presume the government would suggest that this would put an end to people being driven often under the cover of darkness to places. And obviously there's been local opposition to some of these moves. That being said, some might see it as a little bit peculiar, or not peculiar, I'm trying to choose the right word, disingenuous, I'm not sure if that's the word, to wait until after the local elections. Because, of course, I think for the most part, any councillors, particularly those associated with the government, who were in favour of these, if they were announced in their areas, might struggle to get elected. Would you agree? I suggest that might be the motivation. A spokesperson said that once Mr. O'Gorman brings his plans to the government, work will begin on site selection. However, he could not say that any sites would be identified before the June elections, and a number of senior government sources said this would be unlikely. We don't have a set time for how long the work will take, the spokesperson said. Ministers are acutely conscious of potential local opposition to accommodation centres for asylum seekers. However, they also know that Ireland has legal obligations to accept people who claim asylum or international protection and accommodate them while their applications are being processed. But that all seemingly can wait, or potentially may wait, till after the local elections. On to the Irish Independent now, and huge numbers of PAYE taxpayers are due refunds that could amount to hundreds of euro each. The Revenue Commission said it estimates that 480 million euro may have been overpaid in tax last year. Now, you can get companies, now they take a cut, I don't know, maybe, what is it, 5% or something, that will go through this for you if you don't want to do it. There's lots of them out there. Some people don't want to engage with revenue in case it sort of flags something, but for most PAYE workers, it's not an issue. The only issue, perhaps, but potentially might have been COVID payments, which they're looking to recoup. But at the very worst, any rebate you have could offset that, because eventually you're going to have to pay it in any case. But tax officials are encouraging PAYE workers to fill a tax return, saying this is the most effective way for workers to find out if they are due a refund. Half a billion euro of PAYE tax overpaid last year is sitting there in the coffers. Some of that could be yours. Often you'll get a few hundred euro back. Could be a holiday for you and the family in some cases, because you can backdate it. If your credits aren't rightly associated or whatever it might be, it can be thousands. So there's 480 million euros sitting there. Some of it could be you, could be yours. Right, the Irish Daily Mail this morning. The Taoiseach has accused Sinn Féin of adding to the trauma of Ukrainian refugees as the party continues to change its position on migration. Senior Sinn Féin figures have recently indicated three different stances on whether Ukrainians should stay in the country when the EU-wide temporary protection order expires in March 2025. Under the order, Ukrainians receive special refugee status, which automatically entitles them to work. They also get special rates of entitlement, such as social welfare and medical cards. Speaking to the Irish Daily Mail last night, Leo Varadkar said Sinn Féin is causing unnecessary anxiety for Ukrainians in Ireland. Ukraine is still at war, he said. At the moment, rules are set at EU level, so all 27 member states are, and over here to page four, are aligned, which makes sense. I can't envisage Ukrainians being forced to go home or move on while the war still rages. Our records suggest that 20,000 have voluntarily returned, but that is very different. And there are areas of accommodation that don't have as many Ukrainians in them as they did in the past. I'm not sure if that's them moving into more long-term rental accommodation or moving back to Kyiv. I simply don't know. Actually, I'll just stay on that story here, because it's just an update as it relates to payments to Ukrainians. Payments for Ukrainian refugees are expected to be cut to €38.80 from early February. This according to the Irish Daily Mirror. The Cabinet decided before Christmas it would change rules for newly arriving refugees, and it is only newly arriving refugees. This will include cutting weekly welfare payments from €220 a week to €38.80. Additional changes will limit the length of time a person can spend in state-provided accommodation to just 90 days. Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys will discuss the legislation to reduce payments for newly arriving Ukrainian refugees at the Oireachtas Social Protection Committee today. Now, measles is spiking or increasing in terms of cases right across the EU. Thought it worth bringing to your attention. Measles has seen an alarming 30-fold rise in Europe, the World Health Organization has warned. More than 30,000 cases were reported across 40 of the 53 member states from January to October last year, compared with 941 cases in 2022. Two in five cases were in children aged 1 to 4. WHO blamed falling MMR vaccination rates and more people holidaying after COVID, spreading the disease over borders. Okay. And finally, would you put salt in your tea? I'm sure Lee probably mentioned this earlier, but sure, look at, here we go again anyway. This is in the Irish Daily Star. A tea expert, and I would question if they're an expert or not, claims you should add salt to your cuppa to make the perfect brew. Chemist Dr. Michelle Frankel said scientifically it helps to reduce its bitterness. But tea's delicious. Why would you put salt in it? She's also urging drinkers to warm the milk up before putting it into the cup to reduce the risk of curdling. I don't know what kind of tea this lady's drinking. The tips among the unusual ideas featured in a book, Steeped: The Chemistry of Tea, published by the Royal Society of Chemistry. Dr. Frankel of Brian Muir College in Pennsylvania, US, said that she enjoyed the challenging of explaining it in a way that people who are not chemists can appreciate the beauty of chemistry happening. The boffin said, I learn new things about what is in my cup of tea and how to make the best cup of tea. I used to drink half-fat milk because then I'd found that full-fat milk too creamy, and then I switched back to full-fat milk because it's better for Hudson. And My God, I love it again now. It's amazing how you can become accustomed to one taste and then switch to another. But anyway, salt in your tea, claims to be an expert. I don't know. Heating your milk before putting into the tea. I don't take a lot of milk. So I don't know. Now, there's a magazine out as well, by the way, and this is freely available. It's called The Business. It's from... it's a magazine of the Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce. I thought it was Letterkenny Chamber, but it's now officially, apparently, Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce. And it's called The Business, and there's lots of great reading in it, particularly if you're a business person, but even if you are not. Lots of great pictures, well produced. Keep an eye out for it. It features a feature on Mark Sheen Kelly, Business Person of the Year, Brody Sweeney, the ATU Donegal, Annette Houston of FM Services, etc. There's even a picture of us in here. Highland Radio's featured in it. But then again, our boss is this, the president of the chamber. I'd be disappointed if we didn't get our face in there somewhere. But anyway, there's loads of stuff in there, loads of great pictures. So that's called Business. It's from Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce. And it is around about the place. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000. If you want to pay a compliment to someone, send us a WhatsApp voice message, and of those that do, we'll select one of them who will receive a Highland Radio 9 till noon show goodie bag. Joined on the programme now by Councillor Martin Harley, a business person, and of course Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. Martin, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Minimum wage increase. We'll see one Donegal business owner having to find an extra €100,000. What also I'm noticing, and I'm not sure it's connected, and we can tease it out throughout the course of the conversation, is businesses not able to absorb the minimum wage increase, and they're cutting hours or closing during the week. We're seeing more of that now, and also across social media, across the country, really seemingly successful businesses with high turnover, or that's how it appears anyway, pulling the shutters down, closing the doors. Is it a tough operating environment for businesses at the moment?
Yes, Greg. I just feel this is going to be a very tough year for the bookers. Like, let's be honest, but it's been a few tough years with the COVID and all that there. But people have survived it. In fairness, to probably there was support put in place during that time so that people could keep their overheads in place. But there's a tough year ahead, and you know, I start off by saying, and it's great to see the minimum wage going up, because in fairness, the people, the workers out there, they have mortgages to pay, they have rents to pay. Mortgages have gone up probably 2% in the last 3 years. I mean, and that's all. So the minimum wage going up is a very good thing. And it's, we have to be kind of proactive and try and make sure people that want to go to work, that it's worth their while going to work. And that's very important.
Yeah, so, of course. But do businesses have the spare resources to absorb that? Because, of course, the government's announced an awful lot of things like the minimum wage increase, which I think, it's important. Extra holiday leave entitlements and all that type of stuff. And all of these announcements look good for the administration. But it seems time and time again, it's businesses that are having to absorb all of these costs, whilst also high insurance costs, high energy costs, and then a bit of frustration that maybe the government's not putting enough pressure on these companies to drive down some of those costs. There's an awful lot of costs being built into doing business now that are completely unavoidable, no matter how well you avoid your business or how well you run your business.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing, is the energy costs have gone up over the last 2 years. That's been a big one. The cost of running business, what will happen as well, as we can see it, Greg, and you can see it in your weekly shop, is the price of items you're buying is going to go up, because the business won't be able to absorb all this here. And as you say, businesses that have been going very well for years are cutting back on days, they're cutting back to 5 days a week to ensure that they can survive. So there is challenges, of course, as well. There's another challenge as well, is during the lockdown, there was warehousing of tax debt. And that all has to be paid by the 1st of May this year, or some type of a plan is put in place the 1st of May. So that is going to be a challenge as well for some of the businesses that warehouse tax during lockdown. So the 1st of May is a big date for those people. And this is something as well that I've listened to from different business people out there over the last number of months. So the challenges of 24 are vast.
The thing about it too, though, Martin, is you see, you talk about the prices having to go up. You know, say, for instance, in terms of the multinationals, they're able to take prices down a little bit now, which that seems like a good thing on the face of it. But these smaller family-owned firms, I'm not sure they have the capacity to do that. And in hospitality particularly, or in that sector, you know, we are in a cost of living crisis as well. And the price of going out for something to eat for lunch has gone up to what the price of going out for dinner almost used to be a few years back. And going out for something to eat, it's becoming incredibly expensive. And I'm not really quite sure how much capacity is left there amongst your average Joe, and particularly here in Donegal, to absorb the rises that you perhaps feel are inevitable. So we are at a really nasty crunch point potentially for business.
Yeah, we are at a nasty crunch point. And as well, what probably you'll see people doing as well, where people that might have went out for lunch twice, two times a week, that will maybe go out for lunch one day a week now. That's where they're going to see it. And that means that you're going to be less footfall in the premises, the cafes, the restaurants, the bars, all the other hospitality sector, and the shops that people would be buying maybe treats for themselves in shops, that they'll say, no, we're going to skip that this month. And that is the problem. So the turnover for all these businesses is going to be down, but their overheads are going to be up. And there's, we have the challenge within the. I was talking to five councillors from Kerry at the weekend. The LAMA conference was in Donegal town last weekend, and I would just have me sitting with five Kerry councillors on the Saturday night, and I was talking to them. And one of those guys near Killarney, he was saying that 12 businesses have closed in Killarney in the last 2 months, and part of the problem there is that 42% of all hotel beds in Killarney are not in use at the moment because of the fact that they're being taken up with people coming into the country who have been displaced from their own countries. So that's a massive challenge as well for the hospitality sector there as well. So when you hear of towns like Killarney, that's a tough, because Killarney is one of the, I can't have many thousands of bedrooms that are in Killarney. It's something like 5,000 or 6,000.
Yeah, but what that means too is there's less capacity, but also what capacity is there, the price goes up. You know what I mean? And how many more summers can that... Because cafes close, restaurants close that are next to hotels, news agents close, other businesses. You know, at what point are we going to say that, particularly for the likes of Kerry and Donegal, both counties have the highest rate of refugees in the country, or one of the highest rates of refugees in the country. Both are incredibly dependent on the tourism dollar, so to speak. You know, where does this end? What needs or can be done? What are you calling? On to be done?
Well, there needs to be more supports put in place for the businesses from the government. And I've called on this over the last few weeks, and I've talked to Minister Simon Harris from the county on Monday as well, and I mentioned to him as well that around the cabinet table, they need to be looking at. But we need someone. We don't need a quick fix, Greg. We need someone that's sustainable over the next couple of years. There's no point putting them in place that's going to be in place for 24.
Yeah, but it's not business supports here. We need to, do we not? We need to give businesses the environment that they can work in.
Oh, yeah. We do need to put the because there's a lot of more employment law and all that there is coming down there. And to run a business now, the amount of paperwork that's involved in it is unbelievable. I mean, people think that if you're working for the business person, once they close the doors, that's it finished. That's far from it finished. They might have 2 or 3 hours of paperwork to do then. And at the end of every 2 months, they might have to spend 2 or 3 days getting their tax, all their documents put in for an accountant to do up their tax for their VAT return every 2 months. That can take days as well. That they think that the business is closed for 2 days. So there's a massive amount of challenges there. Energy costs as well. Something that I probably mentioned as well on the media there during the week as well was that there are supports in place there that probably businesses don't realise through local enterprise office that there's things that we could be looking at maybe through energy cost savings and that there that we need to be doing. There's vouchers for online trading as well with the local enterprise office, things like that there that a lot of businesses may not realise that are out there that can be of some help to them.
So you're saying that we need to get that message out there, whatever supports are there, they need to businesses need to be made aware of them. Okay, well listen, Martin, it's been an interesting conversation. I suppose, you know, we've kind of gone through what the issues are and you've made a few suggestions as to what needs to be done, but it sounds to me like you believe that the government needs to, you know, have a really strong look at this in the round, especially not just getting through this winter, but into the holiday period once again, and create a sustainable working environment for businesses?
Yeah, that's what needs to be done for the next. And say it's not a short-term fix. This is something we need to look long-term. Interest rates will be probably rising again. So mortgages in places and the overheads is involved with that there as well. So there does need to be a long, hard think about this through the departments and send out a message that it will keep people in business, because it's great putting up the minimum wage from 11.30 to 12.70. But that's no good to the worker if the business closes down. And that's my fear for the coming year.
Or they get their hours cut, which is happening too. Okay, thank you very much indeed. That's Councillor Martin Harley, business person, businessman, and Cathair Lough of Donegal County Council. Right, we're joined on the programme now by the owner of Homes in Lough Fearn in Milford, PJ Doherty. PJ, thanks very much for taking the call. I know these things aren't easy, but we appreciate you taking the time to chat to us. How are you keeping?
Good, Greg, thank you.
Right, okay. Now, there's been a lot of conversation about these properties in Lough Fearn. If you don't mind, PJ, just so we're really clear, can you give us a little bit of the history of these? You built these houses, and initially, was the view, was it for the purpose of doing a deal with the council, and then the council presumably making them available for social housing? And how long ago back are we going?
So 2019, before COVID and before the whole rise in prices in construction, Donegal County Council put out a turnkey package. And the gist of the turnkey package is a developer with development land could approach the council under the turnkey package and say, I have land, I will build the houses for you. And we come up with a price. So we set the price at that time. And this is the price we can do it at. And then the council agreed. There was no contracts signed in this. There was specifically this turnkey package was until the houses were complete. The council could walk away or I could walk away. So there was never no commitment in this turnkey package. So we went on and we got our planning, which took 12 or 18 months. We built the houses. But in the period between getting the planning and building the houses, we fell into COVID. I think we were 1 week in on site when COVID took place. And by the time we got back to start building the houses, our prices had skyrocketed. Till the point that we were very shortly back on site and we realised that the price that we had agreed with the council was never going to meet construction costs. And at that stage of the game, I alerted the Donegal County Council that this turnkey package was not going to work for me. And I believe throughout the county, there was multiple other developers in the same situation. So we completed the houses, but we never proceeded with the turnkey package with the council. And 14 months ago, I let the council officially know that I would not be proceeding with the turnkey package, and that the council, under that turnkey package, the houses was no longer available.
Now, they were still interested at that point in paying the 2019 prices, but due to the construction costs
and what? They give a small increase in prices, but fractional. It wasn't anywhere near what it needed to be.
Right, so that was that initial. And listen, the reason there's no contract signed, it's to protect the local authority and the developer. It is common practice, that PJ, isn't it? That it gives the opportunity for either party to walk away if need be.
Yes, that was the way that turnkey package was set up. There was no commitment from either side. Like, I had to finance the development of the houses myself. The council gave no commitment whatsoever. Council give no commitment whatsoever to the houses until such times as the houses are finished. Now, that's one reason. The second reason that I want to add as well that contract didn't work is at the same time that we were building these houses, the entire mica situation broke out throughout the county, and we had the whole uproar in relation to houses collapsing with mica. And inside that, the Donegal Council... Inside that same turnkey package, the Donegal Council changed their approach to us and what we had to require. So what we had to require for blocks at that stage, now my blocks in Lochfern Heights are perfectly fine. They've been all tested and everything's correct. My material came from WJ Chambers in Derry, and all our products is good. But what I will add to that is that the council, within that turnkey package, changed the whole rules of how we had to, they made us test the blocks and they made us do different things that wasn't required under the original turnkey package. And that would mean if I had to finance them houses that I wouldn't be fit to finance them because no finance company would take on the financing of them due to this extra testing and this extra rules and regulations the council put on. So in effect, the first turnkey package that the council released was it was not effective. It wasn't fit for purpose. So it didn't work.
So it's not just the financial element of it. It is the extra regulations that would have complicated your financing options.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And that was all added. That was all changed rather than what we tendered originally. So what we tendered originally and what the council wanted us to take over the line at the end up was totally two different things.
Right. So then there was...
That was adding a lot of extra loopholes to it.
Okay. So, and I presume there's conversations ongoing. I don't want to know your private business because you are a private individual. Is it fair to ask you, can you give us any indication... what percentage of an increase you would require from the 2019 agreement to make this viable to deal with the council directly? Is that possible, or is that compromising your private information?
I have the figures in my head, but I don't have the breakdown of the stats, and I don't really want to be releasing the stats.
That's okay, fine, that's all right. Listen, as I say, you're a private individual, so I won't push you on that, but there is an uplift there, obviously.
What I will say is the deal that we have done with Cooperative Housing Associations is still below today's caps for Donegal County Council. So what I will say is if the council was to support Cooperative Housing Association purchasing these houses today, the taxpayer would still be getting the houses at probably a 40,000 per unit less than what it'll take the council to go out to Milford tomorrow morning and build houses. So if the council was to go out to Milford tomorrow morning and build houses, it would cost them at least 40,000 more to build the same houses.
Right, so you are engaging with Cooperative Housing Association and you are looking for the council to engage with them, and that means through this third party that you get a return on your investment and there's a delivery of social housing for Donegal County Council. Is that's where we're at?
Yeah, so back approximately 7 or 8 months ago, there was support given by the council to support three sites that I'm involved with within the county, and Lochfern being one of the sites. So Cooperative Housing is purchasing three sites of me, which I will build the other two sites out. And that support was given, and I went away and purchased land and put in planning applications and et cetera, on strength of that. Then the next thing was just prior to Christmas, we got word back from Lochfern Heights that the council was no longer supporting it. Now, contracts has been issued to Cooperative Housing Association. The two solicitors are engaged with each other. The valuations has been done. Building control has been signed off. Irish Water has been signed off. The houses were ready to hand over. Like, probably if the council hadn't the pulse support, Cooperative Housing Association would be in ownership of the houses today.
Okay. So are you at this point urging the council to come back to the table, or do you believe that deal is dead in the water now?
I'm extremely losing hope. I'm extremely losing hope, but I still have a glimmer of hope. And if anything comes out of this, what the tension that's happening here now, if anything comes out of this, what I would urge is people in Milford that's waiting to get on the housing list, get on to your politicians, get on to your councillors, ring the council and ask the council out straight, you know, what is the update in Lochfern Heights? Why are they not supporting Cooperative Housing? and get answers, because the reality is these houses are still for sale to Cooperative Housing Association. For an example, if I was to walk away today from this deal, I would have legal costs probably in the regions of 40,000 to walk away from this deal, and Cooperative Housing Association on the other side would have the same legal costs. Now, I have not informed my solicitor yet that this deal is off, because in my head I'm still hoping that this deal somehow will still kick off.
But you must also have in your head a deadline as to where you have to try and get a return on your investment. When is that? Not, I know it's not a firm deadline, but how long are you prepared to wait?
This has been a cat and mouse the last 2 years. These houses have been lying empty for the last 2 years. Now, what I will add to this as well is this is not an isolated case in the county. There is other developments in the county that's in the same situation, and I am sure, I have no evidence of it, but I am sure that other developers in the county has been told that their housing developments has been pulled and they're not, the our other housing associations is not purchasing them now. So I am not, this is a county-wide issue. It's not isolated to Lochfern Heights.
Okay, so there were attempts previously, were there, to move refugee families into these houses. Is that correct? And what happened there?
That is correct. Yes, there was a NIPAS contract through a secondary party on the site. And after the residents moved in, the department moved them back out again because these houses were earmarked for social housing.
And there was a it stirred up a lot of controversy, and I presume, we can't say for certain, but I presume that was a factor to it. So the houses there now are lying vacant. There is some concern that you are now, two of them, you are preparing them to rent. Are you doing that as part of any particular plan? Is it just to try and get some money coming through? Is it actually happening? Are two of them being prepared at the moment for rental?
Yes, that is true. We are starting to... The houses were left totally back to shell again. So there's no appliances, there's no blinds, there's no furniture, there's no nothing in the houses. So our intentions is, if we do not get movement in this, and I'm going to wait now for another few weeks to see what happens, but if we do not get movement and get the council to reverse their decision, then I'll have be left with no choice but to rent these out. But what I will iterate is there is no plans to put refugees into these houses or any Pacific people into these houses.
But that being said, PJ, they are going to the open market. So presumably you can't discriminate between a Ukrainian family and an Irish family, or maybe possibly you can, I don't know. They're going to the open market. So anyone has a right to apply to rent these houses. You don't have a particular preference or track record in renting housing to refugees, for example, or people living here under protection.
That's correct. That's 100% correct. I cannot discriminate between one and the other. So when they go to open market, who, as long as the client is vetted and as long as everything's correct, they will be allowed into the house.
And in terms of rental, I mean, you've a lot of money in here. Recouping that money via rental is going to take some time. The property market is red hot at the moment. Why aren't you selling the houses?
These houses are designed as social housing, and they've been totally designed with the input of Donegal County Council. So they are totally to the specification of the social housing. And with that in mind, it leaves them a different product to take to the market. So it's not your typical product where you have your typical semi-detached house and you have your separate site. These are rows of terrace houses. So it's not the same product as me designing and developing a product for the private market.
Okay. I'm just trying to cover every base here now, because obviously, you know, your words will be scrutinised, as would mine, and I just want to make sure I ask every relevant question. Presumably then, you can't, and some people would say I shouldn't even ask this question, but it's out there, you can't decide who goes into those houses as such. Is that what, so say all 17 houses in the future become available for rental,
anyone who's living here, anyone who has the resources, anyone who has the right credentials can rent these houses as they can any house anywhere in Donegal.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Look, Greg, what I will reiterate here is my desire, and I really want to get this out to the people, my desire is to sell these houses to Cooperative Housing Association. We are way, way too far down the road with Cooperative. We're 6 months down the road with Cooperative Housing Association. They have spent a lot of money. I have spent a lot of money and getting this contract to where it is. The contract is on its 12th hour of going over the line.
Understood.
It only needed that last little letter of support from the Donegal County Council. And as I say, by this stage, the Cooperative Housing would be in ownership of these houses. Ultimately, these houses were built to fulfil a need that still sits today in Milford. And I want to get them houses handed over to Cooperative Houses to fill that need. If the houses go on the private market to rent, you are 100% right. They mightn't necessarily go to the people that need them in Milford, because I can, when I put them on the market for public rent and its nature means that anybody can apply for them.
Do you have any experience that any sections of people or groups of people are better resourced to put them in a stronger position for house rental? I mean, you've rented out an awful lot of houses. Is it possible that, you know, certain groups of individuals seem to have more resources to secure these houses? I hate even asking this question because I have zero issue with Ukrainian people whatsoever. But I mean, is there any competitive advantage for Ukrainian families in renting your properties?
No, I don't believe there is, because as you said earlier, the property market has gone mad at the moment, and rents have gone through the roof. So the reality is, anybody going to rent them property, whether local people or whether foreigners, are going to have to pay the current market day values for the property. Are they going to, for the rental properties? They're going to have to pay that. So, like the citizen of Ireland is up against the same issues as everybody else is, and that is that there's just simply not enough properties in this county, and that is driving the rental market throughout the county. That we are getting multiple phone calls on a daily basis from all sectors of society looking for properties.
Do you have?
There is no properties out there.
Is your intention to rent these to families, couples, or individuals? Are you open at all if you were approached to rent them to, say, for instance, international protection? So, in other words,
they're not available to international protection.
So, in other words, there's no scenario whereby you might have 15 people in a house. You know, if the boxes were ticked, intention is that these are for couples, families, individuals, whomever can pay the rent, just in an open market situation.
Correct.
We're getting messages in. It seems now. I'm not saying this is representative of the residents of Loch Fearn, the surrounds, or Milford, but there are people saying we don't want any foreigners in there at all. Now, I don't know how we got to that point, but that is seemingly where we are at. Do you have any concern that sentiment is out there?
Yeah, 100%. I do. 100%. I do. So that's referring to, unless they have an Irish passport, they're not allowed in to rent in them houses. And like, that in itself is scary. But like, take it from a business point of view, if I have to rent out all these 17 houses, my financial return in these 17 houses is going to be in excess of 20 years. If I can continue on with my deal with Cooperative Housing, the people that need the houses get the houses immediately, and we get our financial return now, which needed to go into all our developments in the county to build all our houses for social housing.
Okay, so the ball, you would say the ball now is in Donegal County Council's court. I think you said earlier on that people with an interest in housing in Milford should actually be focusing their efforts on lobbying local councillors, local representatives, to impress on Donegal County Council that this deal is still on the table, that these houses would be acquired below Donegal County Council's own caps at the moment, and it's over to them, but you can't hold on forever. Does that sum it up?
I can't hold on forever, but I still have a hope and a desire. And I think if the local people that's needing houses, if they have anything to do today, make a phone call to their politicians, make a phone call to the council, because that's where the focus needs to be at here. We need to get answers. Why is there developments lying around the county that are ready for completed and ready to hand over, and the council are pulling support on them, when we're in a situation that the council is not producing houses and the whole county is crying out for social housing?
Can I ask if the houses have already been, the two houses that you're prepping, are they already given to, have they already been given to people at this point?
No.
There's no provisional deals.
The houses, there's no furniture in any of the houses. Okay. There's no blinds.
But these two houses will be advertised publicly. You know, not through any other channels. They'll be advertised publicly, and everyone will have an equal opportunity to apply to rent them. They're not going to be going through any...
When they're ready. And even if we were to start to get them ready today, it'll take a 2 weeks to get them ready. So
but
when
lorries
ready,
have been going in, bringing furniture and stuff in already, though, haven't they? That work has begun.
No. There was one small van from IKEA delivering flat pack furniture last Saturday evening. Right, this is how this kicked off.
All right, okay. Well, listen. Go ahead. Did you want to say one last thing, PJ?
Yeah, there was a van with flat pack furniture, and the two people that's been highlighted here was there to accept that flat pack furniture into the house. And like, it's a local contractor that kits out the remaining furniture of my house, my houses. And he hasn't even been appointed yet to put in the appliances, to put in the blinds, put in the remainder of the furniture.
I hate to ask these questions because it's not in my nature, but the two people that you've referenced, okay, there has been some online suggestion from various places that they may favour applicants for those houses of certain nationalities or backgrounds. Can you confirm that that's not the case?
They don't have the power to do so.
Okay.
They don't have the power to do so. The properties will be on the public market, and whoever is there to rent them will be renting them. There has been nobody appointed to rented houses yet. So okay. There has been nobody allocated to any house yet.
Right, PJ, I think that covers...
What I will say is we already have two houses out there privately rented. Two Irish people in them 17. So as a part of them 17 houses... Two of them, like this is not something new, two of them on a short-term contract, two of them would, as already rented.
Understood.
To Irish people.
Okay.
So,
right.
Like, these renting these houses, it's not a new scenario. Like, there are already Irish people in two of them 17 houses that is rented. Not foreign nationals, Irish people.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, like...
Under short-term contract.
Exactly, but I mean, you know, at the end of the day, people living here, regardless of the background, you know, these could be families that are working in the hospital and are saving people's lives and been living here for 10 years, and now they could be scrutinised because they're not Irish, in inverted commas. There is elements of this whole... the questions I have to ask you that I'm not comfortable with, but I just wanted, whilst you were there, to try and get through as much of it as you can. But as I say, some of it, I'm actually not even comfortable asking the questions because I've got friends, and I've had very good help from people of all different nationalities and all different backgrounds. But anyway, PJ, unfortunately, that's the space we're in, and I appreciate you coming on and clarifying.
The bigger question is here. Sorry, one second, just to delete this call. The bigger question is here is why is Donegal County Council supporting housing associations to purchase houses and then pulling into them? Like, I have another two sites that I've invested a lot of money in that I have invested in the strength of getting support of cooperative housing because cooperative housing got support of the council. Now, I'm sitting back waiting for the email to say that cooperative housing is pulling their support in them after me investing all that money. So, and I'm not an isolated developer around the county. There's other developers around the county that's got the exact same views. And I would urge them developers to come forward.
Is this going to lead to a problem, do you think? Like, we need a lot of houses, forgetting the thrust of the conversation we've had so far. We need a lot of houses here to grow the county, but also to deal with people that need accommodation through defective concrete and what have you. Do you think the way the council is handling these issues is actually going to mean that developers who we need are going to look elsewhere to do business? Do you think this actually could have an impact on a housing delivery across the board in Donegal, finally and briefly, PJ?
I don't think it. I know it. In the last 18 months, I have invested in 11 different investments in Northern Ireland simply because I don't trust the structure in the Republic of Ireland. So all my future developments, and we already have one of our sites in Northern Ireland on the ground, but all my future developments is going to be in Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Because I don't trust the structure here.
We'll have to leave it on that note. PJ Doherty, owner of the houses in Lochfern in Milford, thank you very much for your time today.